The 27, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, we're continuing on our last day of public hearing today, and our chair is with us now, so, Chair Quano, we just started.
Okay, so Carl, coming up next, and Beth, IRMD. Good morning. You get to be first.
Thank you.
I'm Carl Weineke. I work for the Department of Administrative Services in the Information Resource and Management Division in the section of Strategic Planning and Review. I am the state's Quality Assurance Manager, and my primary responsibilities are to monitor the status of all the information system projects in the state, particularly the major ones, which are those over $500,000. My reporting function is primarily to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Technology and Management. So that's kind of the background.
It's nice to put a face to someone who all these issues are referred to.
Thank you. In, just to retrack the OLCC project, I'm going to use a couple of terms here with the committee's approval. One is MRI, and MRI is the contractor that the Liquor Control Commission hired for this particular project. And the other one is SAP, which is Systems and Procedures. It's a corporation originally, I think, out of Germany, which is now pretty well based throughout the world. And they are a prime contractor that has developed a series of modules. A lot of people view these modules as a enterprise resource planning system, and they build from one module to another, and eventually you can have your entire organization run under this computer software system. In November of 1998, the commission embarked on a process to implement a new warehousing system. They were driven by the need that their current system was not Y2K compliant at the time, so they had to do something. They had an aging system, and it made good sense at that time to replace it. The effort was, thank you. Incidentally, the commission has volunteered to put any money in here. Joan Terry behind me has volunteered to put any money in here, so feel free to just run a tab.
And don't get carried away with yourself.
Anyway, getting back to their project, in November of 1998, they entered in what was to be believed to be an 8-month project that would lead to implementing the warehousing module. Unfortunately, it required some modifications for the needs of the commission. And to execute those changes, OLCC hired MRI Corporation, and that's Management Resources of Virginia Incorporated. The in June and July of 1999, at the first series of deliverables and testing of the new system, they started experiencing difficulties in the cycle testing phase. And at that time, that was to kind of signal the beginning of a long series of contractor promises and broken promises. The commission at that time in early July and August elected to make the decision to remediate their existing warehouse system and bring that up to Y2K compliancy. And I don't know if they were visionaries at the time, but it sure proved to be a very good decision to remediate their existing system. MRI, for their part, during the same period, were attempting to also make changes to the product that they had delivered and thereby complete the cycle testing. The commission in late fall enters into its busy season. And they had made the decision that they really didn't want to do a cutover during the December time frame, which was their very busy season. So they were somewhat postponing the actual turnover of the system, but it didn't slow them down one bit from doing cycle testing on the products that were being released by MRI.
Excuse me, Carl.
Please.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Carl, so what we're saying is that in August, September of 99, they would just go ahead to make sure that their existing system was Y2K compliant, and that at that point MRI really wasn't complying anyway, really wasn't performing at that particular point anyway with the SAP system that you were looking at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that is correct.
Okay.
On all points.
And when was the MRI system a contract entered into? Do you know that?
It was entered into, Chairman, it was entered into November of 1998. And it was at that time believed to be an 8-month contract.
And the cost of that contract?
I can look here briefly.
Sorry to get you off
balance
here, but... Well, you're looking at Representative Gardner. This is Carl. How do we pronounce your last name?
Chairman Wynicke.
Wynicke. Hate to beat people's names up, but I sure would on that one. He's from DAS, and he's talking to us about IRMD. Information
Management
referral to his resource. Management
resource. I thought I had that on the
okay.
Point. Okay. Obviously didn't. And the he's talking about the system that OLCC has, the MRI system, which is Management Resources, Inc. at Virginia.
Not to be confused with magnetic resonance imaging? Or?
It's true.
Okay.
That's what I thought first.
Okay.
OLCC was into magnetic imaging of maybe their shelves or something.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, from a time frame standpoint, I'll kind of drop back to in August when the first set of deliverables failed.
Mm-hmm.
There were naturally the issues between the OLCC commission and the contractor about what the deliverables were and what the functionality was supposed to be at that time. The project was at that time about a $980,000 project, so it's just slightly under $1 million at that time.
That was at the time of November 98.
Correct, Chairman.
Please proceed.
Thank you. During the pushing and shoving match between the deliverables which were being produced by MRI and the commission to verify that these did meet their needs, there was a series of discussions, series of promises by MRI, and none of those deliverables, well, a series of those deliverables, probably about a third to half of those deliverables, were actually presented to the commission. During testing of each of those, several of them failed, and the commission did not feel that they were making any progress, substantive progress, on the delivery of this system. In the ensuing arguments that took place between the commission and Management Resource of Virginia, on just what that functionality was or should have been at the time, they decided to bring in a third party. And the third party that was selected was SAP Corporation itself. Now, SAP was the developer of this module and the marketer of this module, and MRI was to modify it for the needs of the commission. So SAP at that time had a lot of concern with this, and their reputation was also on the line. During the studies that took place at that time, SAP Corporation went in favor of the commission that the product had not been modified correctly, and that it needed to be changed to meet the commission's needs. MRI during that same time was also working in another state on a project. It wasn't the magnitude that this particular project was, but they appeared to be distracted during that same time frame. So that kind of added to the difficulties that the commission was facing. Additionally, the contractor, MRI, was losing staff. And it left the commission in January time frame of this current year with no other step other than to issue a letter of breach of contract to MRI at that time. We do not know at this time if MRI is even in business. They've completed their other effort in another state, but in all likelihood they're no longer in business.
Now, was the MRI contract brought to you to OK?
All these contracts were approved by Strategic Planning and Review Section of IRMD. The agency, for its part, has had quality assurance involved on this. One of the very better ones that we have within the state, and they were very active in the remediation between the commission and MRI, especially at the point when SAP Corporation was brought in to assist during this process.
And I'm sorry I stepped out a few seconds, but when SAP came in to implement, take over the contract, what is the cost of that contract, and when did you say that came in?
Chairman, SAP came in to do a review, and that was just a cursory review of their product as it was being modified by MRI.
But they're not, they didn't?
No, they didn't do a full remediation. As I understand, that contract has been, or that opportunity is now available for SAP at this point to come in and present that. And I believe I heard the other day in early April of this year, where the commission is expecting a proposal from SAP Corporation to finalize the system.
And that contract or proposal will be brought before you, is that correct?
Yeah, Chairman, yes.
Okay, go ahead, please. Unless there are further questions, go ahead.
That kind of brings us up to date on where it is. This has been a very elongated process. It's been a very difficult process. The state has not always experienced difficulty with contractors, but we're certainly seeing it more and more on a lot of projects. But this one just kind of fit that same pattern.
Ben Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Carl, two questions. One I'm sure you're already looking into and taking care of. And that is, will the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division go ahead and make sure that whatever the review of qualified request for proposal for qualified applicant that you'd be able to screen out those things that where we had the problem with the MRI. That'd be number one, and that's just an issue that you do your very best, I'm sure, just to make sure that they're a responsible bidder, and try and ascertain they're doing another project in an adjacent state, and it seems to be going okay. Second issue is where are we at with regard to the total cost in relationship to the $980,000, and how much will we eventually have into this lock, stock, and barrel, including our training time and so forth?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the commission, when the initial products were failing from, there were the deliverables from MRI Corporation, they withheld payment at that time, and they haven't made any payments. So I'm not exactly sure on that reserve. I would estimate $300,000 or $400,000, just from what I think I heard at past time. So they have that. I would expect, though, in all cases such as this that have occurred in our state and other states, it generally costs you more to remediate than what you've withheld. That's generally a given in all cases. As far as the review of their contracts are concerned, at your request, I will personally look at all of the contracts with this project as they come across.
Thank you. And staff has just informed me that OLCC, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, did in fact work closely with the Attorney General's office once they had these problems with it. Management resources. You're really going to
hire me.
With the MRI.
MRI.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question of legislative fiscal staff. We've got the carryover then that will be to implement the original SAP program to be expended now in the 2000. Well, or will it be accomplished by the? Doesn't sound like it'll be accomplished and up and running with the various modules as an enterprise system, fully integrated enterprise system by the end of this biennium. So is there carryover then?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's one of the technical adjustments that they brought to the table, is to carry those resources over.
And do we have an estimated cost for the additional remediation, as Mr. Wank is indicated that we'll have more money into it normally to remediate the program?
The agency hasn't given us any estimates on what the full remediation cost is. At this point, they're anticipating that the project itself is not going to cost more than originally anticipated. The cost would be absorbed in their base budget.
Okay, next we have going with him.
Yeah, we're ready to go with these questions.
Okay, we're ready to go to the questions. Pamela, if you want to come forward.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pamela Arison, Director of the Liquor Commission. We have not completed our presentation. Do you want to take questions first, or do you want us to? We had a couple more sections to complete.
Is that something?
These were the questions that came up during the previous presentation, so you might want to just cover this real quickly and then go into your...
Yeah, the regulatory and the sports services is what you were referring to. We'll do those after this.
Okay.
The questions that you were given that you have responded to.
Okay.
Just these two?
Okay. You wanted some additional information on agents' compensation, and I have Alex Lennox here to give you a brief explanation of it, and he has some examples. So I'd like to call Alex Lennox up, please.
Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alex Lennox. I'm a research analyst for the Commission on Fiscal Services. I look at part of my job involves studying agents' compensation and how we're paying them, paying agents, as well as studying their income and expenses and profits of the businesses. I'll just give you a brief explanation of how agents' compensation is calculated. The packet that we gave you this morning, if you turn to the second page on that packet, is a brief description of what agent compensation is composed of. Like many retail or many organizations, we pay our sales representatives a base plus a commission. And there's a third part that we'll discuss as well. The base in this case is determined by the size, the sales class of the store. We break exclusive liquor stores, those that are standalone liquor stores, into six sales classes based on their gross annual sales. We move stores into different classes twice a year, the end of the fiscal year and the end of the calendar year. That's about 150 stores. The other 800 or 80 or so stores are considered non-exclusive stores, those that are in communities that are not large enough to have a standalone store. So what you'll see is the base will vary from sales class to sales class. When this system was conceived in the mid-80s, the base was intended to help cover the many of the fixed expenses of the store, the rent, the utilities, those sorts of things, the kind of expenses that would be needed to at least keep the doors open. It, again, varies from class to class. The second point or piece is the commission rate. We call it variable compensation. We revise it now every 6 months because we're trying to keep on track with paying compensation at 8.54% of gross sales.
Steve Hayden.
Would you just spend a few more seconds on what base compensation is? You went through the categories of stores, but I see category one is base compensation and the amounts. I don't clearly understand that.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, class one store. They're fairly small. There's only 8 of them. Sales of less than $200,000. We pay them the base compensation at the same rate we pay non-exclusive. In this case, it's the first $10,000 of monthly sales. They'll receive up to 13% of that, so a maximum of $1,300 a month in base compensation. Now, if you're a class six store, say the largest store in Portland or in Oregon, which is in Portland, has a $5.2 million in sales last year, that store received $2,600 a month in base compensation. Again, originally intended to cover many of the fixed costs. Since these rates haven't changed in 15 years, they probably don't cover more than a portion of it. At that time, it probably covered many of the fixed costs for some of these stores.
Chair, just to make sure that I'm understanding it, and I didn't get that out of the actual brochure. This is 13% of the first $10,000 per month, and then these other amounts, even though we're talking about range and annual sales, we're talking about compensation on monthly sales.
On a monthly scale.
Okay. All right.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we pay this. This is the way we calculate it every month.
Okay.
So this is not an annual payment.
All right. I didn't understand that.
Okay.
I read it in the brochure, and I'm looking at the brochure and saying, I do numbers and lines and charts, but I don't understand how to read the numbers and lines and charts. So
and when we show you some examples, there'll be an example for a specific month in time for some actual stores. Does that help, Representative Hayden?
I believe so. I'm just not clear how say a store was doing $10,000 a month, they would then get 13 annual sales. No, if a store were doing $10,000 a year in annual sales, they would get
13%
$10,000 a month of the first monthly sales. The first $10,000 in monthly sales. Remember that
the $10,000 is monthly also.
Right.
Okay, so the amount, the class, I understand, the range of annual sales, I see the word annual, and then the next column is the amount per month.
That's correct, Representative Hayden.
Okay, I'll work with it here.
Okay. We'll move to the second component. That's the variable, what we call the variable compensation, the sales commission. Give it a more common term. Every agent receives the exact same percentage on the sales. And we have two different commission rates based on the kinds of sales because we have two general classes. We have a commission rate for sales to walk-in customers, those who come in, put the money on the counter, walk out with a bottle. As of January 1, that rate is 7.21%. So if someone were to walk into your store today, pay $10 for a bottle of vodka, you would receive at the end of the month 7.21% of that $10.
Can you give us a history, please, on that, Alex? I know this is revised January 1st, and so if you have it available, I'd be fine. But how often is it? I know how I'd feel if I was on January 1st and all of a sudden somebody told me, hey, we were paying you 8.54%. Tomorrow we're going to start paying you 7.21.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, actually the 8.54%, just to clarify this, is a factor only in determining the total amount of compensation to be spent in the biennium. It is not a factor in determining the amount that goes to any single liquor agent. If we were to pay 8.54% of sales to every single liquor agent, half the stores would probably close. And those would be the ones that would be probably a class three, fairly small store on down. What's happened with the variable commission rate is we've typically changed it every year. Now we change it, we look at it about every 6 months. Because, again, we're trying to make sure that we don't spend more than 8.54% of total sales. And, of course, we don't want to spend less than 8.54% of sales. So we're constantly trying to keep the two lines together. It's kind of like hitting a moving target when we forecast what the sales will be, but you can never be sure. I mean, that's the nature of forecasts. They're always going to be off some percentage.
Madam Chair. Well, I understand that after you take all your expenses, including the 8.54%, the rest returns to the general fund, so you have some interest in determining how much your total expenses will be, but other than diminishing the general fund a little bit by paying 9% or 10%, what would happen other than a little less into the general fund?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, if I understand...
I mean, how did you come to the 8.54? That seems a very precise figure that's been drawn out of thin air.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that is has been determined by the this committee. 4 years ago, two sessions ago, this committee chose a dollar amount for agents' compensation and worked backward to come up with a percentage.
Okay.
And was determined that since sales generally have exceeded the forecast, inserted a budget note that said if they exceed, you know, we're to pay out at an average of 8.54% of sales. And if it exceeds the forecast, we come back to the emergency board and ask for an increase in the limitation. Again, based on 8.54% of sales. The commission does not determine that rate.
So it's had I
been here 4 years ago, I would have the institutional memory to know that, but I wasn't.
Well, neither were we, so okay. We can't blame it on you two either.
Wasn't on the committee.
So it is not statutorily mandated, but suggested by a budget vote.
Madam Chair, that's correct. It is not in statute. It is it's a budget note determination by the committee, and we follow it very closely. So what's happened? Just to give you the history that Representative Butler asked for on the variable commission rate, we started using a variable commission rate in 1987, fiscal year 1987, and at that time it was 5%. For walk-in customers and 3% for dispenser customers, for licensees. Today, those rates are at 7.21 and 5.63. And over those, from that period, from 1987 to now, they've been altering those rates roughly every year, not quite every fiscal year, but close, to keep paying out the appropriate amount of money. We've chosen to change the variable commission rates, the sales commission, rather than increase the base compensation amounts, I think at large part because the agents have preferred that. They prefer to have the opportunity to make more money on each sale than to increase the base. At least the last two conversations or times that we've dealt with this that I've been involved in the last 6 years, that's been the case.
Last change before 01-01-01?
The last change, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, was in July of last year, and the rates, I believe, were 6.83% for walk-in customers and 5.33% for licensees, sales to licensees.
So those were in effect for 6 months?
About 6 months, right. And
notice is given 3 months in advance?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not exactly sure what the time period is. I think it's fairly close to when the changes are going to occur. We usually will send a notice out that says, as of X date, these rates will be in effect. We review them. Again, we have a standard memo that explains the process and why we're doing this. Every 6 months, we'll continue to review the sales for the sales and see that we're paying out the appropriate amount of money. Again, going back to the way or the components of the monthly paycheck, the third component is at the option of the agent, and that's deferred compensation. The agents have the ability to invest money in the state's 457B deferred compensation plan that's available for state employees. They've been allowed to invest in that as well. And the commission will, or they will receive a match up to $150 for exclusive agents and $118 a month for non-exclusive agents for this deferred compensation plan. And of course, this is like a 401k or a 403b. All interest and income on the accounts deferred until they retire. Excuse me, until they retire and start taking withdrawals from the account.
Can they invest up to 25% as other state employees can?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, they can invest up to the maximum amount by law, which I believe is $8,000 a year right now, which is the same for everyone else. I believe that changed this last year.
I just wanted to make sure, right, and I apologize if I missed this. It's a matching deferred compensation plan. Do they have a choice as to where they go with the deferred compensation plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, there's only one deferred compensation
so
plan
it must
available
be
in
with
the state.
States.
That's correct.
Okay. Mandatory.
They have the same. They have access to the, many of the same things that are available to state employees in this case. And in this case, it's the 457B deferred compensation plan.
I'm sorry if I missed this as well, but this the deferred compensation plan, was that done by rule or was that mandated statutory?
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure. I don't believe it's in statute. I don't believe it's in statute. I believe this was a decision by the possibly by PEB, which or the Public Employee Benefits Board, which manages the 457B. There may be other self-pay groups that would be included in this as well. I just don't know.
Something out of your expertise. Representative Hayden?
Well, you say that they do have the same benefit in this thing that the state employees do, participating in the deferred compensation program. Can they also purchase their medical through the state? Do they have other fringe benefits?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, they have access as well. They have to; it comes out of their own pay. They can purchase health and dental care through the Public Employee Benefits Board. We have looked at this periodically. PEB has changed the way that it's paid, but they do have access to that, so they're able to take advantage of the group health benefits available to state employees.
Madam Chair, do they have, in addition to deferred compensation, do they participate in the retirement program?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, no, not to PERS. They're not able to take part in PERS.
Okay. Thank you.
I believe that's restricted just to actual government employees. So I'll give you an example now. We'll start with a small store. This is a class one small store. Frankly, until yesterday, I wasn't even sure where it was at. Not a native Oregonian, so I wasn't quite sure where Union was. So I just happened to choose Union. I'm sorry. I admit it. I'm from South Dakota, so I don't know. I know small towns, but not this one. And this is an example of how we would have paid this agent in July of 2000. You'll see at the top what their gross sales for the year were. In 2000, the gross sales were $132,912 for the year. Out of that, the agent received in gross compensation, this includes the amount that they put into deferred compensation if they choose to participate, $22,050. That equates to roughly 16.6% of sales. Now, recall how agent's comp is paid, how we talked about it, the system is paid out. That actual percentage doesn't help you very much because we don't base pay on that percentage. Every agent will have a different rate based on their actual sales and the sales class of the store.
By month.
So the fact that this agent received 16.6% of sales sounds quite large, but that total dollar value was only $22,000. In July of 2000, this agent received, would have received, this is an example of how compensation would have been paid. Base compensation would have been slightly under $1,300. That's because their sales for the month of July did not exceed $10,000. You can see that in number two, which is the variable commission. And to walk-in customers, they had about a little over $8,000 in sales, and to licensees, a little less than $1,600 in sales, for a total variable commission of about $638. This agent elected to take deferred compensation, so they received a match of $150 for a total compensation for that pay period of a little over $2,000. As a larger example, we actually just decided to use storage you heard about yesterday, Lincoln City North, which John Harrell talked about yesterday.
Is under three, is that total compensation or is that total receipts out of which they have other expenses?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, that would be total amount of money paid to them for that period. So they would take take their business expenses out of that amount of money. So this is their gross income.
So their personal draw would be something less than
Less than that, yes, sir. So in this example, we have it's a Class 5 store. As Mr. Harrell told you, about $1.4 million in sales. Out of that, the agent received $122,588, which is 8.67% of sales. Again, the percentage here doesn't really tell you very much. It's much smaller than the Class 1, but the dollar amount is five times larger. So the percentage doesn't tell you a great deal. For the month of July, the agent would have received the base amount of the $2,340, and then variable commission of a little under $9,000, or a bit under $9,000. Again, the agent uses deferred compensation, so would have received somewhere around $11,400 in total pay from the commission for that month, out of which they will pay their business expenses and their own take-home pay. If you'd like, I've got one last example, a little bit slightly different. This is the largest store in the state, the Uptown Market on Northwest 23rd Place, just underneath Burnside, if you ever go there. It's kind of difficult to find. This agent had almost $5.3 million in sales last year. What you'll notice with this one is that this agent has its sales split is much different. The majority of its sales go to restaurants and bars. Three-quarters of its sales go to restaurant and bars. So his gross compensation for last year was $337,000, or about 6.36% of sales. Much of that, the reason it's so low is because this agent focuses on, has a very heavy dispenser market, and that's paid at a lower compensation rate.
Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
I'm not sure, Alex, whether this is a question that I should direct to you, but I'm going to go ahead and direct it right now. But between the 5.33 that was being paid in July and the 6.83, that's 1.5% of compensation, what's to keep the XYZ Bar and Lounge Company from walking in and saying, hey, why don't I split that extra half percent with you? I'm going to order $10,000 of product this month. I'll just get you a check for 10 G's and we'll split it.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'll take a shot at the question. I think part of it is that the licensee receives a 5% discount on the sales.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have a financial incentive to pay the walk-in.
That's enough for me to know, right? Yeah. So he gets a 5% discount.
5% discount, right. And I would imagine if we found out about splitting the profits between the licensee and the agent, that we would not respond favorably to the agent.
You'd have to respond unfavorably because he's stupid enough to give away about 4.5% of it, that's it.
Your liquor license, I can tell.
Not good with math. That 5% just keeps adding up, man.
So continuing for this example, this agent received a base compensation in July of $2,600. But you'll notice that their sales were quite substantial, over $400,000 in sales for the month. Would have received a variable rate of about $24,000, almost $25,000. And the agent takes deferred compensation. So their total compensation for the month would have been in the range of $27,300, which, again, is at a smaller percentage of total sales, but is substantially higher in raw dollars, gross dollars, than a much smaller store.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. Not being privy to one of the contracts, do you have access to the income tax records of each of the folks that are licensees?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that one of my duties is what's called the annual agent cost survey and the cost report that we produce. We survey the agents every year for their business expenses. About half choose to send in their Schedule C or their 1120S or whatever form they use, and the rest will just complete the form, which asks the same questions that you would find in a Schedule C, exact same organization, in fact. And then we ask for a breakout of capital expenses and those sorts of things. We produce a report then based on those, on averages for each class of the respondents.
So, for instance, if we were looking at someone that was making $20,000, a Class 6 store that was making $20,000 a month, and gross compensation for that particular month, average $240,000, what might that particular licensee be netting on a monthly basis? Do you have any feel for that, Alex?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, what I'll do with those numbers is we will adjust them and try and factor out, kind of in a cost accounting fashion, factor out the expenses that you would charge to related items. One of the questions we ask in the survey is the gross related item sales, because we know there's an income stream from that. So we will apportion expenses to liquor and related items. The vast majority go to liquor. On the average, probably 90-95%+ go to liquor. And then we will estimate an income, a profit off of the liquor operation. For our last report was in 1999. For 1999, it sounds late since this is 2001, but that's faster than the IRS does it. They just released their 1998 information. A Class 6 agent, for example, in this survey, had an average gross compensation, including deferred comp, of $185,000. Almost $600.
That's the gross compensation.
Gross compensation. Had an estimated liquor operating cost of $118,500 for an estimated net income of $67,084, out of which they would pay their Social Security taxes, their health insurance, and the like. We break it out for each class, and we break it out for different groupings of non-exclusive stores as well.
Just one follow-up on that, so I understand that that's $67,400 approximately, and then that's after allocation of up to 90% of the rent and the labor overhead and the supplies and those kinds of things, and then whatever they've made off of the balance of it, the other 10% of the overhead would be apportionable to that remaining gross income after cost of goods sold.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's true. It's done for each agent as we enter the data, so it makes the split for each agent. I couldn't tell you what the average is for a group, but it's, I'm sure, in excess of 90% goes to liquor.
Right, I just need that
but
by way of
it, it works that way. We also will take the data and we'll work out rounded weighted averages for all exclusive agents. I haven't done it for non-exclusive because they're difficult to estimate, but that's essentially what we do. It actually was $67,084, not
$67,084, so just under $67,100. Thank you.
OK.
Okay, go ahead, Alex. Are you finished?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
And that's it, Madam Chair. If there are other questions on anything with agents' comp, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any other questions?
Just one question. Alex, why do you do what you do? Because they tell you to. Why do you do what you do to come down to an average compensation for Class 6 stores or Class 5 stores or Class 4 stores? Why is that so critical? Can you give me some rationale?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we do this because we were told to do this by the Joint Ways and Means Committee back in, I believe, 1985. They demanded information on the costs to and profits of operating liquor stores, and we have done it ever since. We've learned, I believe, through experience that if we were to stop doing this sort of thing, invariably someone remembers that we had done it and had been told to do it, and they're not very happy. So we've done this every year. It's actually proven to be quite useful. At times, we've identified trends in increase in rent, and we use this to identify increases in payroll because of minimum wage changes about a decade or so ago, which enable us to get additional money for agents to help deal with that.
Finally, just one last. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
No, that's fine.
Who do you share this information? This is extremely valuable information. And I'd like you to just think for just a moment, in addition to the commission and Chair Ferris, who do you share this information with? Where does it go?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, all of these source documents are confidential. They never leave my control. The report is published. It was provided to a handful of agency staff. There probably aren't very many who would be interested, so about 10 or 12. And a copy goes to every single liquor agent.
Of all
236 agents received a copy of this report.
Copy of all of the full all classes.
All classes.
So basically, it becomes public at that point.
It's public. We consider all of that public record. All of the source information is not. That's restricted access.
Source information is subject to Freedom of Information Act.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, in this case, I don't believe so. It's confidential tax records in most cases, and actually, after we're done with it, we shred it. So I've never heard of a request for that source document.
Source documents you don't maintain. You just take your analytical information and shred.
That's correct.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as you can see, this formula is extremely complex and results in literally a different compensation rate for absolutely every agent. We have many times tried to simplify it, but every change you make hurts somebody and helps somebody else. So we have not yet come up with a way to change it so it works better. Obviously, it creates a lot of confusion. What we have done in the business plan is indicated that we would like to move a number of the lower class stores to non-exclusives. As you can see, the store in Union, that's not a whole lot of money. And as those turn over, we will offer to applicants the opportunity to put them in existing businesses so that they can so that the liquor is just an ancillary business of another operation. But, someday we would really like to simplify this compensation formula.
It's kind of scary when you think of term limits, and somebody mandated that before through budget note. How many budget notes we'll have in the future that have various components for you to comply with because of the lack of institutional memory. Anyway, just a little
Madam Chair, if I may, I'll turn to the travel expenditures. And you see in your material there's a very detailed person-by-person expenditure explanation. I'd like to explain a couple categories first that actually don't represent travel by the commission. The first one is on your first page of breakout where it says meal allowance contract overtime. Those people didn't travel anywhere. We have a contract for our warehouse workers that requires if we pay them overtime, there's a meal allowance that goes along with that. So these people got money for a meal when they worked overtime, but they didn't travel anywhere. They stayed in our warehouse.
We don't have another category for that?
Apparently not. It goes with the meal allowance portion of, you know, it's just one of those accounting anomalies.
In the budget, you see that your overtime pay is $163,370. That's the pay salary only, and then in addition to that is the $9,958 for meals.
For meal allowance, that's correct. Then on the same page, item number 3, MBF MRI paid to contractor, there's an expenditure of $17,677. As you recall, we did cut off contract payments to the to MRI, but we were still trying to salvage the project. We wanted them to continue to do cycle testing. We agreed to pay some travel expenses for them to come from Virginia to help resolve issues and to continue some of the cycle testing, and there was some progress. It was slow and, of course, ultimately not what we would like, but we did try to salvage some of the activity.
That $17,000 was in addition to the $907.
That's correct. And as you recall, we have not paid that full amount out. We have about $300,000 that is it was not paid out.
Excuse me, Pamela, when was the last amount paid out to MRI?
November. When was the last time they were? Oh, on the contract. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, on the meals.
Oh, on travel. The last expenditure for travel, it was last fall.
Okay. But the meals are not for MRI folks, is that correct? That was for the...
Well, this is travel.
This is travel expenses for mm-hmm. them to travel from Virginia to our site to do testing. You also see very references to SAP. That's the software provider that we use. We needed to spend some money to get our staff familiar with the SAP software in operation. We sent them to at least one site to view the software in operation, and we sent them to a SAP training program, I believe it was in San Francisco. A lot of our staff travel. Our distillery reps, they spend most of their time on the road, and so travel expenses are substantial for them. We have 4 district representatives. Each of them have at least 60 stores to work with, and so they're on the road a great deal. Our liquor inspectors, also the same is true. They spend a lot of time on the road, particularly those that are stationed in our rural areas. They are constantly on the road doing their work. So that will be a substantial expense. We do send people out when hearings are held outside of Milwaukee. That happens from time to time. Our hearings presentation people. We do use lay representatives. We don't have every case represented by an attorney general, and so they will need to travel to the hearings. Let me talk about a couple of major categories for out-of-state travel. I've spent a fair amount of my time traveling outside the state, and my purpose has been to find every piece of information I can to deal with underage drinking. I've scoured the nation, and I don't think there's a piece of research I don't know about. In my view, this is the state's most serious alcohol problem. As you saw, our workload continues to go up, but our staff is either static or on the downhill slope. That means I need to get absolutely everything out of my staff that I can get. I don't want them working on a project that's not effective, it isn't going to produce results. And I need to know about the research out there that tells me what works and what doesn't. I also want to invest in my staff's training. We've sent a number of people to the National Liquor Law Enforcement Officers Training Academy. Those are very specialized training. We send two or three people every year. We believe that upgrades their skills and makes them more valuable employees. The other aspect of out-of-state travel is the fact that we run a multi-million dollar business for the state that has products from all over the world. We do need to be on top of trends. We need to know the products that are out there. We need to know about the technology. And for those things, we often have to go out of state. It's pretty rare that you'll have a conference on technology or alcohol products that is in the state of Oregon. So those are some kind of routine things that I believe are necessary for out-of-state travel. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Hayden? Well, it's a philosophical question, and you really reached me when you said that you had read every piece of research on teenage drinking. I think that's incredibly important, and I really commend you for pursuing that. But I'd be curious to know, as an agency, how you relate to and what you think about the fact that you sell a legal product that kills people, sort of like a gun dealer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that our sheriffs tell us that 90% of the traffic, 90% of our 650 traffic fatalities a year are alcohol or drug related. As an agency, how do you relate to that emotionally?
Representative Hayden, I think that's a very good question. And there are times when you go to a liquor store and you see people that you know are long-term alcoholics that are in that store, and they are buying a product from you. But you have to always go back to your mission as an agency. The data shows that if you have a strong control over this legal product, that consumption is less. It isn't enormously less, but it is less, and it does reduce the social cost to the state. Alcohol can be a very dangerous product, but if used in moderation, it can be fairly free of harm. And adults, like I indicated, have moderated a lot of their behaviors. That doesn't mean we still don't have adults that have very serious problems. But I think it is a fine line to walk. You have to be very, very clear what your mission is. And I think that's really the key.
Thank you. Dan, a couple of questions relative to some of the travel issues. This is just confirmation on the first page, then, that MRI was paid, the contractor, I think Carl Wanky and indicated that they were actually working up through August of 99, And then we must have worked them to try and get some of the modules to work and paid for additional expenses for travel to them through September of 99.
Representative Butler, that is correct.
And up to that point, we wouldn't have been paying them travel, would we?
Representative Butler, we had hoped to have the project live and over with well before that, according to the original time scale. So we never intended on having them travel at that time.
But we wouldn't have had them paying. We wouldn't have been paying them travel during any of the contract, because that would have included in the contract price.
That's correct.
So really, the MRI payment to the contractor here for travel, is that just for 1 month or 2 months, the $17,000?
Representative Butler, I believe that's for that was for several people, and I believe it was more than one trip. And we would have folks be there to do the cycle testing for a week at a time. And since they came from Virginia, it is fairly expensive to house people for a week and to pay their travel costs.
Okay. And the final question relative to that, was that done through some sort of a formal arrangement? I mean, you're now paying outside of the contract, and obviously they haven't delivered, and obviously they haven't performed. At that point, there's an anticipatory anticipation of the breach, some sort of an anticipatory breach. At that point, was this done by a written agreement of some sort?
Representative Butler, at beginning in the summer, we started working with our attorney and operating through letters back and forth. At that point, we became very, very careful about documenting.
So this was legalistically
back.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. I'm satisfied with that. And the NABCA, what is that organization?
The National Alcohol Beverage Control Association is the National Organization of Control States. So that is the 18 jurisdictions. And they put on an annual conference that has a trade show and has various workshops and so forth regarding the regulatory side of our business. They do pay for several commissioners to attend, which we think is pretty important because these folks need to know about the business, about the product that they are managing. And we will have two new commissioners this time around, so it's fairly important to get them up to speed on the business and so forth.
So the National Alcohol Beverage Beverage Control Association pays... We pay dues to them, and
yes.
Then they subsidize commissioners to attend?
They do.
Okay. Did we get a list of the actual dues that we're paying to these race organizations?
We do. We have, I think, the raw data. I think we were categorizing it.
Okay.
I don't know that we're entirely complete.
Okay. Thank you. And I noticed the reason I ask that is that there's one employee that has attended on one page here that's attended three different NABCs and then one hearing on a regulatory program and then one NABC. That's another NABC. Betty Worcester.
Bette Worcester. Bette is heads our license process division. She's in charge of licensing. She also was one of the people who developed our server education program. And one of those is the education conference. They have an education conference now annually. She was a panel member. She's the NABCA in Wyoming is we have a it's a national organization, and then they have a Northwest Control States meeting every year. And she, I don't know that she's actually going to go this time.
The reason I ask is the one hearing process, the regulatory program, was four people attended it at a cost of about $6,400.
And I don't believe this was one hearing. I believe this is the cost for sending these people. Nancy Carter is our regular case presenter, so she's going to go to most of them. Other people may be called as witnesses, so we have to send them to hearings that are like in Medford or.
So these particular document numbers ALCOC 0813.
I have no idea what that is.
That's a classification number.
That's a position number.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's just a person's classification.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't a document, this right. Person's document.
Yeah.
And then relative to the field investigations, you indicated that's for all of the travel for field investigations throughout the entire state. That's all in-state travel.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And then... finally, the NABCA Law Conference in District of Columbia, I guess D.C. would be District of Columbia?
That's correct.
Ray Baum attended that with an assistant attorney general?
That's correct.
So are we paying for AGs, in addition to their fees, we pay for when they travel?
Mr. Chairman, that was a... I believe we negotiated something. We didn't want to pay for their travel plus their time, and I think they agreed to pay for their time, and we paid for their travel. Is that what we arranged? And we do look at the agenda to see whether it's relevant. We haven't sent her this time, but we did send Commissioner Baum.
In addition to someone from the AG's office?
This time, I think we only sent Commissioner Baum.
To a law conference?
This time is now?
It was a couple of weeks ago. We
okay,
sent him...
Those expenses don't show up here because it's current.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's no... and maybe there is no classification for employees or assistant attorney general.
Not a class.
Okay. So that would have been for last year's conference. I'm assuming I don't have a date on it. When Ray Baum attended, an assistant attorney general went with Mr.
That's
Baum.
That's correct.
Okay. Right. And that was the one where time was not charged, but we paid through OLCC the and in that particular type of a law conference, and that would be working with regulatory alcohol. Agencies nationwide then are regulated.
That's correct. The NABCA employs a lawyer that keeps abreast of all national legal issues, and then they put on this law conference. And illegal importation has been a major issue, so they keep us abreast of what's going on.
And let me just ask this: how do you select which attorney general's assistant is going to go with Commissioner Baum at that particular point?
Representative Butler, it's our assigned attorney.
Okay,
she is the one.
Someone that would be that standard assigned to the agency that assists you in all of the types of regulatory issues. So it's they don't shift the attorneys around on you, so that you're training one and then training another.
That's right. We wouldn't like that.
Okay, excellent. And I think I had. The very final one, attend hearings, attendance at hearings, and this may be a number of hearings, someone from the Department of Justice in addition to two of our employees, are the two of our employees, those are hearings officers and a principal executive manager.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Charlotte Rutherford is an administrative law judge and now works for the central panel. These may have been expenses before they transitioned. The transition was January 1, 2000. So there was a six-month period in the biennium where the ALJ still worked for us. Judith Brasanovich is the head. She used to head the department that the ALJs were with.
Okay. And then was there... Well, that's fine. I just want to make sure that we're not, because we have, obviously, as you know, Director Erickson, we do have a separate budget for the Department of Justice to travel on, and I'd hate for them to be traveling on your budget and telling us that they've been very, very good in their travel expenses by not charging very much to travel.
Thank you for that information.
The time
we'll use that in our next negotiation.
Please. Okay, I think we were on the regulatory overview to finish that up when we were in last session.
Okay, I'd like to call up Linda Gnowski to give the regulatory package.
Okay, Linda, where will you be drawing your information from?
President Butler will be under budget packages. I think it's number 201, the first one. Very first one, number 201, called F, OLCC's Priority Public Safety Program.
Okay.
Page 77, did you find it? Sorry, I had it right in front of me. Page 77. Tillman Butler, Representative Gardner, I guess, is the only ones left.
We'll hang in there.
I'm assured from at least one other member that they're diligently watching this on the television, so, and taking notes.
Okay. For the record, I'm Linda Ignowski. I'm the Regulatory Program Director for the Commission, and I'm here today to present to you a brief summary of our budget package, number 201. This package is basically about efficiency and customer service. We're proposing to add 4 half-time positions in our one-person offices around the state, and this will allow our inspectors to release them from their office duties and be able to be out in the field dealing with the issues in their area. Since 1991, our regulatory staff has been decreased by 11.5 positions. However, the number of licensees has increased by 30%. And a lot of this is due to the growth in the population of Oregon in general. The growth in tourism has had greatly impact on our hospitality industry. And also we're seeing in the last 10 years a lot of different types of licenses that weren't existing 10 years ago, especially in your brew pubs, your wineries, tour boats, and a lot of our special events are increasing as our hospitality industry increases too. Our licensing work takes a great deal of time from our people, and it takes them away from priority issues. And this is particularly true of our 1- and 2-person offices. These people out there are considered dual role, and it really is probably more appropriate to call them multi-role specialists, because not only are they responsible for all the licensing work in their district, but also all the compliance work, but also they're responsible for keeping the clerical and their office open and doing all the work in the office. Even though we're trying to simplify our licensing, right now some of our inspectors are still spending at least half the time, if maybe almost their full time, trying to do licensing work, which gives them little time to deal with the compliance work out in the field. Even when we centralize our licensing, they're going to have to still do some things for us in the licensing area. And so we are looking at trying to help them out. They spend a great deal of the time answering the telephone, sorting out mail, responding to correspondence, ordering forms and supplies. They're doing photocopying. They're accounting for daily cash. They're handling special license applications. They're filing and maintaining district files, and they're performing other clerical tasks. These clerical tasks and the licensing work and the time spent traveling keeps these people from really doing the compliance work they should be doing, what they were hired to do. When these people are out traveling, the office is closed because there's nobody else to man it. So when they are traveling doing compliance work throughout their districts, the office is closed and the phone goes unanswered. If you look at Eastern Oregon, we have inspectors who are housed in Pendleton who have the responsibility to go to Ontario, to Milton Freewater, and all the way down to John Day, and it takes time to do that. And when they're gone for days at a time, there's no one in their office to answer the phone. We try to route those phone messages to the Bend office so they can be answered, but it's very difficult for quick action when nobody is in the office. We believe these smaller communities have just as many alcohol-related problems as the bigger urban areas. Unfortunately, we have fewer staff to deal with them. We believe maintaining these offices are really important to us. I think as we see a lot of businesses trying to centralize, we maintain that it's important to have people out in the field to be able to respond to the public, to the communities, to be able to service to a law enforcement out there instead of having to call one central office to get help. And so it's really important to us to maintain these offices. However, as our workload continues to grow, our license numbers continue to grow, it's very frustrating to our inspectors that they can't get out and be out there with their licensees, but they're behind the desk doing office support work. We tried an experiment in Warrington. We have a one-person office out in Warrington, and we decided to try to take most of the licensing work away from this position to at least free him to try to do compliance work. So we've done that for about a year. A few years ago, we didn't have a really good relationship with Chief Dupree out in Astoria because there was a lot of issues out there, and our inspectors just couldn't respond fast enough to that. I met with Chief Dupree about a few months ago, and our relationship has turned dramatically around. This man has really was accommodating our inspector. He says, I have seen a tremendous difference because your inspector is now able to deal with the licensed people here. He says, I don't have to be my staff. He says, my law enforcement people are not having to deal with problems in their licensed premises as much as I did a few years ago. He says, I see a dramatic difference in having your inspector able to concentrate on compliance issues. He says he gets complaints from licensees that they see our inspector a lot. And that's important because, as I said before, we have laws in the books, and if nobody's out checking them to make sure they're followed, then people get lazy and they get lax and people don't follow them. So this was an experiment, and it turned out to be a very good, and we're going to continue that because we think it's really important to have a concentration on, and people know that we're checking and they're going to stay in compliance. However, we have four small offices, one in Warrington, one in Newport, one in Roseburg, and one in North Bend, Coos Bay area. And we did have one in Baker City. We chose to close that one down as the position became open and move that position into Pendleton so they would have more support. And so that he has a little more traveling to do now. But at least he's able to concentrate more on the compliance issues instead of having to deal with the office work that he's doing. So we believe at least 1.5 positions in these offices is appropriate, and we're asking for these positions. if we can't obtain additional positions for this, we will be looking at, as these one-person offices become vacant, is to evaluate whether it's feasible to keep them open anymore, and perhaps move them into their regional office so they will have the support, clerical support they'll have, and so they can concentrate on the compliance issues. We're proposing to put these positions in Warrington, Roseburg, Newport, and North Bend, and they'll just be half-time positions. At least our offices will be open half-time and have some regular hours so the community will have accessibility to our staff. This budget package costs about $154,000. I'll be happy to answer any questions for you.
How many questions of the committee? How many of these dual role staff offices do we have? You say that you'll be looking at closing these offices down. How many are there that you would be closing down with
We would first look at the one-person offices, which would be Warrington, Newport, Roseburg, and North Bend. We've already removed the Baker City one. We have two people in Klamath Falls, and we have three inspectors in Pendleton.
If you were to close your Pendleton when all three eventually, through attrition, resign or retire, then you wouldn't have anybody in Eastern Oregon, would you?
Well, if we chose to close Pendleton, I don't right now have any desire to close Pendleton.
I don't have any desire to close Pendleton. But if you're hitting your one-man offices, eventually you'll get to the two-man offices at that point,
yeah.
Through attrition. Be down at two people.
Well, and to me, that's not that. The Eastern Oregon is so far the travel right now. Pendleton is a stretch. I mean, when he goes to the Ontario area, it's a 3-4 day trip to do the things they need to do and get back. So to close that one and have people going from Bend is almost, it's not feasible.
And so these folks in these four offices have the dual roles, and the one office that you tried just having the moving the regulatory responsibility just to the one person, which office was that?
Warrington. We took the licensing function, most of it, out of his hands, and we dedicated somebody in the Portland office, and so the person in Portland travels to Warrington at least once a week. To deal with the licensing applications and meet with applicants in the Warrington office. It does create more traveling, but for the issues that we had in that Warrington, Gearhart area, to me it was well worth the expense of this traveling because we have really gotten under control the issues that have happening in that area.
I don't mean to pry, but if you worked that, it looks like to me Warrington is probably closer to Pendleton, and you could probably sort your staff around so that Pendleton could probably handle the issues in Warrington too. But that's just where I'm coming from, and that's a $154,000 package.
Right.
Okay. And we have that how that package is broken out.
Yes, Mr.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Karen Gregory did already go through the package number 103, so I'd like to call up Joan Terry to talk about information systems and capital improvements.
I see it is coming.
You can't tell us that you're going to need a new roof. We've got a new roof.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joan Terry. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Liquor Commission, and today I'm going to talk about the last two budget packages in your book. The first one I'm going to talk about is capital improvements. It's on page 89. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Liquor Commission, and if I get too boring, you can pull the plug. The Liquor Commission...
You can just go ahead, Ms. Terry, for just as long as you want, but we leave here in 30 minutes.
You got it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got the message. Liquor Commission was built in 1954. We own a 14 and a quarter acres in Milwaukee. The original building was 26,000 square feet, and the warehouse was about 98,000 square feet. The warehouse was expanded in 1977 to its current size of 125,000 square feet, and the building, our office portion, was expanded in 1991. The 1987-1989 legislature approved it for building in the 1989-1991 period. We built a 13,000 square foot addition to the office portion and combined all of our staff in the Portland area. The Milwaukee office houses approximately 180 staff of the over 200 positions that we have. We typically come to the legislature and ask for capital improvement packages that are basically less than 10% of the value of the building. And there's a couple of reasons why we do that. One is because any size project that goes over $75,000, we bid through the Department of Administrative Services Purchasing Division. We work very closely with them on our bids on the capital improvements to our building. And the other reason is because we have a small staff that handles the capital improvements, and they can only do so much. We are proposing $201,000 during this biennium, and we are proposing that level of funding be included in future budgets as a base budget for us to use for capital improvements. Our capital improvements over the last few biennium have run around $300,000. Last biennium was an exception. I'm sure Representative Butler will remember that we did replace the roof on the majority of the warehouse, and that was a big project for us. So the $201,000 is what we are asking for in the base. There are four maintenance pieces to the capital improvement budget. The first one deals with radiator valves and traps.
My goodness, you did bring the kitchen sink.
Mr. Chairman, just part of it. This is $75,000 that will replace valves and traps in the steam heating portion of the original building. The original 26,000 foot building is served by steam heat. We have 250 horse Birdfield boilers. This is an old trap, this is a new trap. You can see there's a slight difference in them. They don't make these traps anymore, unfortunately. We have to replace them with these kinds of traps. So it'll require a little bit of re-engineering. This is a condensate return trap. You can see the damage that water has done. Actually, this trap, this steam trap, was replaced in the 1970s. We are on Milwaukee water, and although we treat the water, you know, with the appropriate chemicals and so forth, you know, the power of water, the power of steam, you can see what happens. So in order to make the building steam heat work efficiently, we're requesting $75,000 to replace valves and traps.
Just one question, Ms. Carey, relative to the overall construction projects that you're entering into under package number 405, do we have oversight through the Department of Administrative Services physical facilities? Do they maintain any oversight, for this is a state-owned facility?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the Department of Administrative Services Facility Division enters into our contracts any time that we need to hire an architect or an engineer. On regular maintenance projects, they leave it pretty much up to the Liquor Commission.
So this is not an engineered project, and this is just a retrofit of some sort?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's correct. It's just a retrofit. It's a maintenance.
Thank you. I'm just sensitive to the issue of heating systems, and Representative Gardner's got some background in the trades industries, and I'm just sensitive to heating systems being replaced in today's environment. All of these pieces have changed since the 70s, and I think it's probably safe to say that they'll change probably in the next 10 years again. So, with the technology. And it concerns me, and perhaps Representative Gardner, you could weigh in on this. It just concerns me that we would be looking at the total price of this package over $200,000, and then with commitments of $200,000 in each future year, that we probably should have some oversight when we get into those areas.
But if I could, Mr. Chair, just a question for you. Did overall, radiant heat is certainly a form of heat that's rather going out of style and not as efficient as some of the systems that are out there now. Did you look at an overall package of possibly replacing all of the heating, ventilating, and air conditioning systems?
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, if you will look on page...
Most of the product we've got here doesn't freeze either, I think.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't.
92. That shows our 10-year facility plan. For the 2003 to 2005 biennium, we plan to begin that evaluation process to evaluate the boilers to see whether or not there is another system to replace the steam heat that we use in the majority of the building.
Go ahead, please.
I just had one other question. I've noticed you're doing brickwork, heating, and cooling, radiant traps. How's your electrical? It's only a joke. I'm sorry.
Well, we need those once in a while.
I would ask a question relative to the 2003-2005 a total reevaluation of the existing heating system at $75,000 commitment this year just to do maintenance, which is a fairly substantial maintenance. And again, I think I would defer to those people who have a greater technical background. It looks like to me that there's a lot of money going into a retrofit right now, with the next biennium basically reexamining the entire system. Just an observation, Chair.
You've got to have a work group of one.
I think that's a great idea, as a matter of fact. I think that's a great idea.
Representative Gardner, would you be a work group of one to go ahead and...
Oh, I think Representative Butler should join me, actually.
Well, I've already got him. I've kind of got him busy, but I'll certainly make him busier.
I'd be happy to be part of
that. Thank you, Representative Gardner. Okay, go ahead, please.
Thank you. The second part of our package is climate control for our computer room.
our computer center. This is a picture of it up on the roof. This is a picture of the controls in the computer room. This piece of equipment does climate control for our computer room 24/7. Now, this is not part of the original building. This is dedicated strictly to the computer room. This unit is 15 years old. We, of course, have responsibility for the reliability of our data. We looked into rebuilding this equipment rather than replacing it. And what we found out that the cost of rebuilding it was just about the same as replacing it. So we are asking for $21,000 for it.
That would be a replacement.
Yeah. The third part of the capital improvement package is for heating units, heating unit replacement for the 98,000 square foot piece of the warehouse, and a heating and cooling unit for the warehouse office. We don't cool the warehouse, it's too big and too high.
That would be part of what our subcommittee of one would also look at then as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we would welcome the subcommittee of one assistance.
Certainly.
The report's due tomorrow morning.
Oh, okay. I'll have to study over the weekend at least.
Okay. Well, the report will be due Monday morning.
The last piece to our package is for brickwork repair. The original building that was built in 1954. We have some photos here that show the flaking of the mortar and so forth. This is $40,000 to repoint it.
Touch pointing.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Butler, the building was built in 1954.
First check point.
Yes, sir.
They did brickwork back then.
They knew that. Yes, they did. They made mortar back then, didn't they? Okay.
Madam Chair, that's the end of the capital improvement part, and I will move into technology if you desire.
Okay. Go ahead, please. I'm sorry to the committee this morning. We're trying to get through with us today. And so if you need to take a break, do so on your own today. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Policy option package number 304 is on page 84 of your book, if you'd like to refer there. We have four projects that we are requesting funding for. The total is $311,150. And again, the OLCC did it, didn't they? The Liquor Commission is requesting that level of funding be included in future budgets as a base for ongoing technology system maintenance. The four parts of this package deal with equipment replacements that are part of the Liquor Commission's local area network. Our wide area network services go through the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division. This package is broken into four parts, and these four parts are the first four priorities of our business initiatives for 2001 to 2003. The first part is $133,650 for desktop hardware replacement. We have an information resource management plan that we have developed for the Liquor Commission with Carl Weineke, who you met this morning from Information Resource Management Division. We work very closely with him in developing not only the plan, but what we plan to do within that plan. The $133,650 will bring our software current so that we are able to run the most current software releases such as Microsoft Office, Windows 2000. It makes us compatible with the Department of Justice, with Information Resource Management Division, with Department of Administration, and so forth, to share documents, and also to keep us current with our trading partners, the liquor licensees, service committees, liquor agents, other control states, and so forth. The second piece of the package is to replace printers. It's $47,500. Now, the printers we replaced are 5 years old, and none of them are duplex printers, which means they don't do automatic double-sided. You can actually make them do double-sided if you have a manual intervention for each piece of paper. We are working closely with the governor's office to meet our goals under the executive order on sustainability. Replacement of these printers is part of our sustainability effort. Double-sided copying happen at the Liquor Commission. We have regular audits of our paper use by an internal group of employees that we, of course, report to the governor's office. And the agency has actually been able to reduce paper consumption by 15% over the last 2 years. But in that same time period, the cost of paper went up 19%. So it's kind of a losing battle. The third part to our package is to enhance our local area network. This is money to replace routers, switches, and related equipment that makes our internal network work. All the pieces to that will be purchased through the Centralized Purchasing Division at the Department of Administrative Services. The current network hardware won't allow us to do some of the things that we have planned. For instance, document scanning and imaging, warehouse automation, electronic commerce, and to run internet applications. The last piece to our package is $31,000 for servers. And we also have a chart in here if you're interested on page 88. It would be the second set of computers from the left. This is, we have two Unix servers. And I don't think that Unix is an acronym. I put a dollar in anyway. The two Unix servers that we have are proprietary servers. They are data general servers. They do not meet the state standards for open technology. So with the $31,000, we are in anticipating replacement of those two servers with a more open standard, and also to replace a server to provide better network access to our little tiny field offices, to the 5 remote offices that Linda Gnowski talked about, and to replace a server that does the fax services for the merchandising system and for news broadcasts from our Communication Services Division. Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Questions?
I just have one question, Madam Chair.
Representative Butler.
That was all of the portions of Package 304 are in addition to the balance of the $980,000 that we're spending on the SAP system, SAP program. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm sorry, I was turning my pages. I didn't hear the question.
Okay, that all of Package 304, the $133,650, even though it includes local area networks and replacing servers and hardware, desktop hardware and operating systems, is all in addition to the $980,000 of the SAP system that we're presently under contract or working contract to finish up with the SAP company.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that is correct.
Further questions? Okay.
We did that.
Oh, okay.
That was the day I fell asleep because you guys had to come down and get me off, right?
You're still on Ontario, Tom.
I've seen you fall asleep. Unless you have questions, Representative Butler.
Does anyone have any questions of the agent compensation program that was given last week or earlier this week by Karen Gregory?
The only Madam Chairman, if I may, I have a group of questions, but it's about an inch and a half thick of the issues that we discussed yesterday. And I'd like to have an opportunity to just discuss those with the department, if I may.
Mm-hmm. You do want to do it now, or you do want to do it now?
No, I'd look at the department privately, and then we can bring it back on the public record, so we'll be able to identify exactly what the concerns are.
Okay.
Because I think there were some things said in the public testimony yesterday that was taken. We want to go ahead and make sure that we maintain the integrity of the individuals that work for the department, or for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, as well as make sure that the record reflects an adequate and appropriate response to anything that may have been indicated that may not be absolutely accurate, or to which the agency would like, the commission would like to make a response. And so I would like to go ahead and have an opportunity in that regard to work with the OLCC director and another staff as appropriate to have those questions reviewed with the commission, and then return perhaps at a later date to respond.
Yes, as you and I have discussed, I've been concerned because I do not have at this point enough. I've heard enough concerns expressed by members. I do not have the votes to currently pass this budget. Therefore, I have asked Representative Butler, due to some of his concerns, to be a one-man subcommittee to meet with the commission director and Mr. Lang and others to resolve any of the concerns committee members have. So if anyone else would like to help Representative Butler on this, I know Representative Butler is going to help Representative Gardner on this subcommittee.
he gives his report before I give mine.
And so we will ask you to meet with the various individuals and come back to us when we're ready to have a work session on this budget. And before we close this public hearing today, Pamela, do you have anything you'd like to add or anything? I'm sure you're dying to respond to a lot of things, and I'm going to be happy to to say what you'd like before we close the hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just want to express my appreciation to the committee for your interest and excellent questions about us and our business, and I look forward to discussing with your subcommittees the individual concerns that you might have. And I would invite you to, should you have any questions, things that you think of, you know, later, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We will try to be very responsive to legislators so you can do the best job you can do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pamela. And Joan Terry, I assume, will be available for Representative Gardner and his subcommittee assistant to work with on the things that she brought to us. Anything further, the committee members? If not, next week we will begin with Susie. Do you want to share with us what we're going to do next Monday? Revenue, right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have on the schedule the OLCC for Monday for work session, but if we're not ready for work session, we will move Department of Revenue ahead and hold the OLCC budget until we have a resolution. So
most likely, unless you guys work really fast, we will most likely do begin with revenue. And the revenue department, if we do begin on Monday with the revenue department, they are taking us a tour so that we can see. It's a walking distance tour. So either bring your umbrellas or your walking shoes, whatever. If there's nothing further for the committee, we'll meet on Monday. Anything else? Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
You thrill and visit my tax return.
Visit our money. Yeah. Visit our